Welcome back, folks. On today's show, we do the high bay deep dive. That's right. We talk about high bay lights, how to change them, what kind you should use, what you should do, how to install them, all these kind of great trade secrets that Greg and I have learned throughout the ages in the lighting business. We're old souls now. And so we've pulled out a lot of high bays. We've installed a lot of high bays. We've sold a lot of high bays. And so has Jason Hendren, the CEO of ILP Lighting. Go to ILP-Inc.com, Greg. ILP-Inc.com.
That's right. So they've been around since 2003, and they focused, at least the ILP side of their business, is focused on high-efficiency lighting products in a wide variety of commercial, industrial, and outdoor applications. They make over 20,000 fixtures a month, a lot of LED purpose-built, as you'll hear today Jason talk about. They still have fluorescent high bays. You need a fluorescent high bay? I needed 10 the other day. They had them in stock. They sent them to me the next day. I'm telling you, if a company can do that, they can do anything right now. They also own Green Creative. A lot of you have heard that. And that's important because now they have the fixture side covered and they have the lamp side covered. So they're a full solution for anybody who needs LED lighting. ILP's got it for you.
There you go. So go to ILP-Inc.com. That's ILP-Inc.com, whichever you prefer, ink or hyphen, dash or hyphen. But yeah, ILP-Inc.com, folks. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, NAILD.org. Check us out. We got a convention. We're a bunch of lighting badasses, and we hang out, and we talk about light bulbs all the time. And we see new products. It's really fun. You should come to the show. That's right, folks. Or maybe the show's already gone on because I've recorded this before, but it came out after. Whatever it is, that's your problem. Thank you for listening to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Jason Hendren.
Thank you guys very much for having me. Appreciate it. And happy Valentine's Day.
Ooh, it's going to be not Valentine's Day when everyone listens to this. But yeah, so Greg, happy Valentine's Day, Greg.
Hey, to you guys as well. I couldn't imagine a better day to talk to two dudes about lighting. So thanks, guys. Valentine's.
Awesome.
All right, Greg, you fire it up, buddy.
All right. So we're going to do a deep dive today on high bays. We've done one on exterior. We've done one on troffers. But we wanted to bring Jason in today from ILP to talk, help us on the high bay discussion because it is an important one. It's in the marketplace. And a lot of the facilities that we're in, we see high bays. But I want to start off with, and Jason, you get to answer this one. When you hear the word high bay or low bay, what is the difference and does it matter?
You know, generally speaking, when we go back to their traditional HIDs, the difference between high bays and low bays, a lot of times the low bays were in your 250 watt high pressure sodiums and usually had some type of a diffuser that threw the light off left to right, wider than the high bay application. So it was not as much even about ceiling height as it was about distribution. Today, in today's market, we don't see a whole lot of differentiation between high bays and low bays. We don't see people getting into the wider throw optics as much. We just see a wider range of lumen packages. And a lot of those lumen packages that would consider the low bays would be kind of crossing over those 250 watt type of HIDs or maybe a, you know, four lamp T8 type of product.
So I think the first point is if a customer tells you they have a high bay or low bay, who cares? Right? Because the term is kind of interchangeable to me. I've heard people say, oh, I've got these low bays and they're a high bay. And so I don't think it matters. You agree?
It doesn't matter as much. You know, we always try to think about, you know, application based and really what height are the fixtures at and what are the distance between them? What's the spacing criteria for the fixture you would use to try to get the right uniformity and not focus as much on low bay and high bay.
I'm with you. Mike, you use that terminology at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of anachronistic, I think, is what we're saying here, is and that it's just really jargon that when people are talking about either a factory or in a warehouse and a ceiling over 15 feet, they're talking about a low bay or a high bay. And in the world of LED, even in the fluorescent, kind of eliminated that a little bit, although I know that, you know, ILP and some other guys had some pretty impressive optics with T5 where they could push the light straight down. With the T5HOs, there was sort of a high bay T5HO fixture. I think it's largely anachronistic. You're looking at, as Jason said, spacing, number of fixtures, height, what they want to accomplish with it, whether the tasks are more horizontally based or if they want a lot of vertical foot candles, those kind of things more come into play. I think the terminology itself is anachronistic.
So now,
yeah, especially when you're
the reason I'm yeah, coaches.
I was going to say, when it comes to the fluorescent high bays, and we do it in LED now, we really dial the optics in tight for aisleway applications where you're trying to get a 1.2 spacing criteria down the aisle and then dial it into, you know, 0.7 to 0.5, somewhere in that range, to tighten the beam so you can lessen the lumens so you're not splashing all the light on top of the aisles. We did that in the fluorescent. We do that a lot in the LEDs as well.
So now the reason I'm interested in this is because our utility company is coming out with a rebate that says, if you replace a fluorescent or HID T8, T5, or T12 high bay to LED, it's all the same rebate, all the same. Mm-hmm. They don't care about the existing wattage. So what is considered a fluorescent high bay? I know a 6 lamp, I know a 4 lamp, I know that. But is an 8-foot mm-hmm. industrial considered a high bay? An 8-foot strip with a reflector and 4 tubes?
I think it would depend on how the utility defines it. I haven't seen that specific utility rebate, but a lot of times when they're looking at it, if you have a 4-lamp T5 over an 8-foot industrial with a mirror reflector, generally that would be considered a high bay, and we would be thinking about what the reduced wattage is in that application. We did a lot of projects back in the fluorescent days where we were doing a 4 or 6-lamp T5 HO stretched over 8 feet and using a specular reflector to punch it down, and that was a pretty common way to take out a 400-watt metal halide in an industrial, especially a warehouse application where you had aisles.
If it's possible, I love smashing an 8-foot in instead of a 4-foot, especially rack aisles and places like that. But I really like the way an 8-foot can lay out. But I was just going to comment on the rebate application there, Greg. This is where there's two me's in those situations. There's the me that looks at something stupid like that, that some idiot that knows nothing about lighting put together, and licks my chops. Oh, okay, we're going to call everything a high bay, are we? Perfect.
Yeah.
And then there's me, the kind of voter side of it, that knows that coming downstream for the rest of the population is the costs of all this non-energy saving, not related to energy saving measures that are put into these rebate applications. And there's two me's there. And I just look at it and think, well, why are we doing this? And then the other me is like, hey, you want to create stupid rebates? Yeah, I'll do that. You know, so I'm sure Greg Eric is licking his chops for his customers in Minneapolis. But in the long run, you know, this sort of complete dipshit creation of rebate applications. And Jason's going, oh, God, don't say that, Culligan. But I mean, it's ridiculous, dude. And what you end up with is just basically, you know, giving people money for nothing. For no benefit to the utility or to the and it's not within the actual conceptual and ideological goals of the program. It's just we don't know how to figure this out, so here you go. But I love them, right, on my business side. So
there. Yeah, and that's where I'm at. And just that terminology that they use as a fluorescent high bay, is it? I think
there's no such thing as a T12 high bay, dude. Like, get out of here.
They have
it
listed. I know. So is it an 8-foot 2-lamp? Is that a high bay because it's high output? I don't know.
Questions high output. What about slimline? But... they're going to go with the slimline high. They're just asking to get jacked. Like, you know what that? You know what that is? You know what that is? That's where I look at a rebate application like that, and I go, "All right, it's time to pull off a massive heist. Mm-hmm. Let's do it."
That's what.
Right? I mean, come on, dude. Don't be so stupid. Call Greg Eric and get him to come up with your rebate program. Pay him $100,000 and he'll help you out.
I like it. Now let's get into high bays and what we're here to talk about other than that stuff. So first things first, when we look at high bays, at least what I wrote, and Jason and Mike, you guys chime in wherever, but I think you got to get to know the ceiling that you're dealing with. First of all, I mean, what is the ceiling height? That's number one when you're dealing with high bays. I think you got to figure out what the height is, where the fixture's mounted at. Because that can vary. Mm-hmm. And also you need to know what type of ceiling it is. Is it a solid ceiling, a sheetrock? Is it ribbed? Is it racking? Or what are some terms, Jason? Help me out with ceiling terms.
Types. Well, you know, I find that that a lot of that investigative work kind of gets cut short if you just start off with what's the existing fixture. So if somebody sends me a picture of the existing fixture, it tells me an awful lot about the application. For instance, if I see a pendant hung 400 watt metal halide that's coming down on a single stem, that's going to tell me an awful lot about the application. If I see a four lamp T5HO up there that's hung off an aircraft cable, that's going to tell me a lot about the application and what fixture I need to use. Because generally what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say, okay, based on this application, does this customer think they have acceptable light now? And if they have acceptable light now, then I'm going to try to go to what I think is going to be the closest lumen package to give them acceptable light. And then I'm going to want to know, how is that fixture mounted? If it's a stem mounted 400 watt metal halide, then I know I'm going to have to either go up with a stem mounted fixture or know that I'm going to have to run some aircraft cable up to the beam, and how far away is the beam. And then, you know, the biggest variable from there when it comes to cost is, am I running 480 volt or am I running 277? Because that's going to affect it as well.
So I'm going to jump in.
It looks
in
like,
quick,
no, hang on. I'm going to jump in.
Yeah.
Jason, you got that high bay talking switch on your back. All we have to do is say high bay and the flick, they flick the switch and he starts talking about it. Go ahead, Craig.
We might need to turn it off for a second because we're going to get to that. But I wanted to start with just focusing on the ceiling. I know that the fixture, that's obviously the most important part or one of the parts. And that kind of comes down the chain. At least in what I set up, and by no means is this the right way, you know, in this order. But if we're looking at just a ceiling, what other things should we look at? What should we factor in? What color is it? How about that? It's important to know.
That starts getting important when you start doing layouts. So if I'm doing a layout for a space, I want to know, first of all, what the ceiling height is, and then I'm going to want to know what the spacing in between the fixtures are, and then the colors of the ceiling and the floor kind of get into your reflectances. So a gymnasium with a polished floor is going to be a lot different as far as the reflectances go. So that kind of goes into, are you going to have the opportunity to wow your customer with a really nice layout that shows them what their foot candles is, take a reading at the job site, say, hey, I've got 27 foot candles. We're recommending this product at 45 foot candles and a 30% energy savings. Those type of things start coming into play.
Yeah, he's got that switch on the back for sure. So just to comment on the ceiling, another one of those ceiling types would be like you know, those temporary tent buildings that you find on farms, where it's like a metal kind of frame and they stretch the canvas over top of it, or that's another one that comes into play. How do you hang it? Because a lot of those HIDs are monopoint hanging and there's nowhere to hang a sort of a square fixture that needs two points of hanging. Yeah, and another thing I would say to add to ceilings is, if you're going to do a redesign, Greg, I've seen this a lot. I don't know if you guys have it in the States, but they run the BX through the ribs of the ceiling. Have you seen this? Uh-huh. Where the BX, and there's a hole in the rib and the BX comes out. Uh-huh. So that's, I always note that, especially if I'm going to do a redesign when it comes to ceilings.
Yeah, how you're going to get wiring if you have to rewire and all that. You definitely need to know that. Domes. I've done tennis domes. You can't mount something to the ceiling. So you need to know it's a dome that can't be mounted to, or that it removes in the, you know, here in Minnesota in the winter, we put a dome up, in the summer they might remove it. So obviously plays a huge factor.
One of the things that we've done is we've developed a really high lumen output fixture for those domed ceilings, because they're all indirect, and those tennis court applications, they want to shine the light up off the dome. So we actually have an LED fixture that shines up for those applications, so they can kind of get that indirect view from a high lumen, high bay fixture. But yeah, all those factors are really important. When we're doing a retrofit, one of the things that we want to do to minimize the expense is to not rewire the building. So we want to know where the existing fixtures and how can we do a one-for-one replacement, so I don't have to get into redoing where the conduit is going or trying to redo the circuits.
Okay. That'll get some into kind of the next step. If there's nothing more on ceiling, will be the application. What specifically, what tasks are being performed at this facility? You know, that number one can tell you a lot. Is it a gymnasium? Is it a warehouse? Is it aisles you're trying to light? Is it manufacturing? Is it hazardous? Is it storage? Is it temperature controlled? That's the other part. Is it operating temperature? Is it what activities go on in that place?
Is it dirty?
Is it dirty? You asked.
Yeah. So obviously. Well, first thing you want to do is you want to start off with how much light is in the space now, and is that enough light for the customer? So we get into customers all the time who say, listen, it's time for me to do a retrofit, but it's too dim in here, so we need to bring the lumens up. So I'm going to want to start off with how much light is in the space existing, and do I need to bring it up from where they are today? So if I'm starting off and I know that I've got a, call it a 4-lamp T5HO fixture in the space, and they say, hey, I'm happy with the light, I'm at 15-foot candles and I'd like to maintain there. That fixture, we're going to want to replace it with something that's in that 16 to 18,000 lumen range, and we're going to be targeting that lumen package. After that, environmental conditions are huge. We could spend the whole hour talking about thermal conditions, max ambient temperatures, but what you really need to know is what is the absolute worst scenario that that fixture is going to see in its life. So if it's in an air conditioned space and it's in, let's say, the middle of Arizona, you better have a pretty high max ambient on that fixture. Same thing if they're in a very high temperate climate like Arizona, like Florida, even if they have air conditioning there in the summer, they're not going to cool the space to 70 degrees. They might get it down to the high 80s during a hot summer day. It's still going to be 110 at that ceiling. You kind of have to anticipate that when you're doing it, and monitoring those max ambients is very, very important.
You know what? That's where HID really still in some ways, like in those really tough environments, it's hard to beat that copper coil in terms of heat, being able to handle the heat. You know what I mean? That big ass core and coil ballast, especially if you're remote mounted a little bit away from the lamp or down the wall or whatever. You look at that and it's just like you're putting electronics into a very, very hot environment. It just, those two things don't go together. Another thing about HID, which is interesting, I was just in this kind of covered yard. Have you ever seen these where it's a yard, but it's the walls are open, but there's a roof over top of it. And what they do is they manage garbage there. Okay. So it's like a transfer station, like a covered yard. And they had all these HPSs in there, and the HPSs were pretty clean, but the high bay fluorescents they had were totally filthy. And I had forgotten, just in the process of doing so many retrofits over my life, that those HIDs actually burn the dirt off their own reflectors. You know, they're so hot that the dirt that goes on them gets burned off and kind of comes off as like an ash. And so the reflectors stay clean. Whereas with LED and T5, you have this dirt, and T8 high bay, you have this dirt accumulation for a couple of reasons. One, it's not hot enough to burn off. But two, you have a wider horizontal surface area for the stuff to stick to in the first place. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that, Greg? Or are we not in your list?
No, that's in the, it's in the list. I want to talk more about operating temperature too, but yeah, I mean, that definitely is a concern. It's similar to outdoor lighting too, where it can melt snow away, you know, yeah. HID skin. So there is a benefit. Sometimes I think it's an inefficient way of doing it. You know, you can wipe a lens down and probably pay less than you would for electricity on it. I don't know that depending on the application, but maybe.
One of the things about fluorescence that was really interesting was that we were relying on that mirror reflector to get the efficiency out. Even the best reflectors were still getting about 93, 94% of the light out. You start getting dirt all over that reflector, your light output's going to go down dramatically. And that's one of the things we saw in any type of manufacturing environment where they were, you know, kicking up soot off of a welding table or machining. Once that stuff got on the reflectors, the light output went down really fast.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you're not talking about 10%. Sometimes it's like 30, 40% of the light output is being, because not only does it not reflect, but that dirt absorbs the light. It's like a double whammy. You know, it's not just the reflection, but the dirt absorbs the light. So it's an issue. What I usually do to handle that, Greg, is I tell the customer, look, we're going to put some sort of lens, low cost lens over top of this fixture. And then every 5 years, you're just going to change them. Or every 3 years, you're just going to change out the lenses. And that'll protect the reflective surface behind the lamps, or in this case, the reflective surface of the LED. And then the lens will get that dirt on, and then we'll take it off and put a new one on. What do you do, Greg?
Yeah, I haven't run into it too often, but that is where we have a lens type situation. I have had it before where we've actually had a clear film that we were able to put on the fixture. And when that film, if you rip the film off of it, it was in a paint booth type application at a car dealership.
What about you, Jason? What would you say?
Well, anytime you're going to have any type of environmental conditions where you think something's going to get up on the fixture, definitely lens it. Today, with LED technology, most of the fixtures that we're shipping anymore have lenses on them. Frosted lenses are starting to become almost standard on a lot of the fixtures that are going out there. The other thing that's interesting about LED is that because it's very directional and we're not utilizing the backside of the fixture or reflector to get the light out, everything is shooting straight down. So it's just interesting when you think about when you're using a frosted lens and a lot of the typical applications, it takes away a lot of that. It also takes away a lot of the hazards around the sockets that we used to see in the fluorescent days because the
Sure.
LEDs are direct wired.
All right, now one question for both of you guys is, what is the highest temperature you've seen in an application at the ceiling for a current light fixture that's been a high bay?
Jason, you go first.
Ooh. 150 in a foundry, easy.
Ooh, yeah. So you guys are talking about Fahrenheit. Okay, weirdos.
Sorry.
Okay,
Yes.
yeah. Okay.
Fahrenheit.
Let me think
Converter
about this
Coros.
now for a second. I would say like the highest measured temperature. I used to roll with one of those guns that you could point at the ceiling and it would tell you what the temperature was up there. But I think I'm going to say, I think the highest I ever measured was 62
Here's your
Celsius.
gun, Mike.
There you go.
Here's
You
your
got
gun,
one of
Mike.
those to Fahrenheit. So what
Visual.
would that be? 62, 143.6. I think that was the highest I ever measured, but that wasn't the hottest it got. It just was the measurement that I took on the day that we visited it, and that was in a mining company up in northern Alberta, where they were underground, and just the heat from the ground was so hot down there, right? So, yeah.
So
So yeah,
what do you do
those
in
are.
that application, Jason? Do you is there a LED recommended to stay HID when it's that warm?
I think if it gets over, 135 degrees, you're better off sticking with your HIDs. When we design fixtures, we typically try to get up to 130 Fahrenheit for our friends north of the border. We try to stay 130 plus Fahrenheit. Typically, some of our fixtures we put out there at about 122, but anything less than that, we really try to stay away from. And if it gets hotter than that, we just don't think electronic drivers or ballasts are good for that application.
In your warranty, do you derate it based on ambient temperature at the ceiling in the application?
We don't derate it, but what we do is every fixture we manufacture has a published max ambient temperature, and if the environment exceeds the max ambient temperature, voids the warranty.
Got it. I've walked away from one job that was at about 150, and I said I wouldn't recommend doing it. And sure enough, they did
Yeah.
fluorescent. This was about 5 years ago, and had major issues with it. So I'm glad I walked away from that. I don't do
How
that too
could you
often, but
like
that one I did.
that blows my mind away. Okay, you have a guy
Yeah.
in front of you that sells light bulbs all day and he says, "You know what? I'm not going to take your money because it's going to be a disaster." And some other jamoke comes along and says, "No, that's not true. I'll take your money." How could they do that? How could you
Because
make
they're in
that
it quick and they're
decision?
getting out. They made the quick money and they moved. They're gone.
Oh, baby. All right, fine.
Term
Have it
thinking,
your
buddy.
way.
So the only other thing on
I'm not talking
applications
about the guy
like
selling the fixtures. I'm talking about the customer.
sure.
Like, how could you like sit down and like interview three lighting guys and one lighting guy that's been in the game for whatever says to you, dude, I'm not even I'm not, this is a bad idea. Keep your HIDs. Here's a lower wattage HID bulb to put in there or something like that. And some other jamoke comes along and says, "Yeah, don't do it." And the guy gets convinced by that. You're an idiot, dude. You're like that's unbelievable that someone would make that decision. Anyway, the customer, I
Okay.
mean,
All right.
not the guy selling
If
it.
sure. And then will the look of the actual fixture matter? Is it retail where the number of retails where they say they don't care how about anything, they just want it round, or they want a square look, or they want a color or something like that. You need to know that factor in any application. So
And
now onto the big meat of
not
it.
only I was going to say not only that, you need to know the color temperature. So for retail applications, a lot of guys don't want 5,000 Kelvin. For manufacturing applications, people love 5,000 Kelvin. It's interesting how that happens. And now we're starting to see even on some applications that people are wanting to even go warmer than 4,000, depending on
For
where it
sure
is.
they should, and they should. Greg, can I go into Kelvin temperature now? Because I know you have a list of things you're talking about.
No,
Okay.
you go.
So the legacy of 5,000 Kelvin and 4,000 Kelvin in warehouse and factories. My belief is that it goes back to the higher CRI levels of those particular fluorescent lamps back in the day, and that people look up at a white light bulb and say it's brighter, even if the lower Kelvin temperature lamp is right beside it and emitting the same amount of light. But I really think that lower Kelvin temperatures are much nicer. Like if in any space, not just an office, I'm looking for even outdoor lighting to match HPS, but with the high CRI and the high, all the benefits of better quality light, but at lower Kelvin temperatures. I think there's something to the color of fire at night with outdoor lighting, and I think that humans like warmer color temperatures better. The problem is when you tell, a naked ape to look up at a light, if that naked ape sees white beside yellow, he says white is brighter. That's an illusion, though, largely an illusion. And I think this industry, and after that DLC meeting yesterday, Greg, this industry is going to start, just like we called on the lighting podcast way back, this industry is going to go for lower Kelvin temperatures across the board. That's my belief. And the people that know are going to have lower Kelvin temperatures.
So you just hit on a whole bunch of topics, but a lot of interesting stuff. I will say that your theory is in part true and in part maybe off a little bit. Back when we were doing fluorescence and I apologize. back when we started doing T5HOs, the CRI between the 4000K and the 5000Ks were very, very, very close. But we would go into applications all the time, and if you put a 5000K lamp next to a 4000K lamp, they would pick that 5000K lamp every time because they swore it was brighter.
Sure.
The other trick that you would see people play sometimes is they would put a narrow distribution fixture in an open area and then put a light meter right underneath the fixture and say, look how much brighter my fixture is. And then we'd have to say, no, we were trying to get your uniformity right. Let's walk in between the fixture to show you that. So you are correct on the 5000K versus 4000K. Almost always the customer, especially in industrial applications, would pick the 5000K. The second thing, when it comes to the CCTs and LEDs, the thing that we've experienced, and this is universal across the board, is warmer CCTs mean lower LPWs. So we cannot get the same lumens per watt out of a 3500K fixture that we can out of a 5000K fixture. So if you look at DLC listings on some fixtures that might be on the bubble, they will not be able to list their lower CCTs and qualify for the same rebates, because when you start getting down to 3,500, you really lose a lot on your LPWs. And what we were finding is that when you're going into an application, especially the early days of LED, you wanted to go 5,000K as much as possible because it had a higher lumens per watt. And sometimes that meant that you could run with a little bit lower wattage fixture and get a better ROI. So that part was really interesting. And now as we're seeing the lumens per watt coming up on the fixtures, we can start getting into the lower 3,500, 3,000K even for outdoor and still get a good return for the customer, because you can get an acceptable, not a great, but an acceptable LPW on those fixtures.
Here's the issue with the 5,000K versus blah, 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 blah. The reason why 5,000K has higher lumens per watt is because of the same thing. People wanted to develop 5000K because everybody said it was brighter. The development of 5000K and LED, I think all the research and development went into that. And it's time for this business to step back and say, you know what, we need these other Kelvin temperatures. And in fact, my prediction is that all of that part of that healthy lighting research is going to tell us that lower Kelvin temperatures are better and humans are healthier under this, all these different factors. But one of those factors is going to be lower Kelvin temperatures, because the sun ain't 5,000 Kelvin any time in the day.
I agree that lower CCTs will prove to be healthier, especially in nighttime applications. I think the science on that is developing. That's all your circadian rhythm stuff. I know we're talking about high base today, but there's a whole science behind that. And I do think that the warmer CCTs are ultimately going to be proven to be healthier for nighttime applications.
One more point. The naked ape evolved with two color temperatures of light. One, the sun that starts at 1980 in the morning or whatever, goes to 3350 at noon and then goes back down, and fire. Those were the type of lights that we evolved in. Why would anything be better than those two? I don't know. You know, that's the question. Why did we evolve to with those color temperatures? What are those color temperature of light? What does it mean to us? What is it? How does it make us feel? I think there's a lot of varying, and like Dr. Veach said, Greg, there's a lot of different angles to lighting where they're bringing all sorts of scientists together. And part some of those scientists are anthropologists and evolutionary biologists that are looking at it from that perspective. But anyway, Greg.
Yeah, we could actually cut this middle out and make it a whole podcast on color
temp.
but we'll get more into that someday for sure. But on the high bay topic and getting back into that is getting to know the current fixture. You know, we're not always, you talked a little before, Jason, trying to do one for one. That's very common in our market too. I mean, it's easier, it's simpler to follow, easier to sell, easier to install, everything that goes with it. But you need to know what the current fixture is. You know, as we talked about previously, it can be an HID, which metal halide, high pressure sodium. Generally, it's metal halide, and for the most, I would say a majority have been that in the past. And then they've now become fluorescent, either in our market for whatever reason, T8 was the one. I know where you're at, Jason, in the coast, you guys love T5s for some reason. But T8s always were more efficient, lumens per watt, when you did the math, if you did a high balanced lumen lamp. But that's another subject. So depending on the market, that's what you see is a lot of fluorescent. So you need to know what they currently have, what the wattage is, what the Kelvin temperature is, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And in addition, how is it mounted? We talked a little bit about that before. Is it pendant mounted? Is it chain hung? Is it surface mounted, suspended? All of that factors into what you're going to put in place. Are they accessible? You need to know that. I mean, is it something where you right up and under, or do you need a, you know, this is more from the install side. Do you need a special lift to get to them? Are they in the crown? That goes into when you look at layouts, you know, making sure that you put the light where they need the light versus well. How many times, Mike, have you been into a facility where a high bay is sitting directly above the rack?
You know, that's a common problem. You know, you'll see it. All the time, even now. I mean, never mind with, I've even seen it where they've retrofitted and they put the same fixture back above the rack.
Yeah.
So what do you want from me? I mean, a lot of that comes back to the landlord. So the tenant's not allowed to move the lights. They have to add extra or whatever. We've had those situations where the lights have to be in the exact location the landlord had them because they're in a grid and whatever. So that sort of stuff happens a lot. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing worse than putting a light above a rack. You waste 90% of the light. So all the time,
right.
Brother.
And you see it all the time. Yep. And you see, they made it efficient by lighting two aisles with one fixture, but the one fixture doesn't light either aisle. Instead, it lights the rack in the middle of the aisle.
You know, Greg, I thought you were rich. I thought you were like a rich guy. I was calling you like Greg Moneybags Eric. Well, why don't you pay your internet bill? Because you're getting a little bit choppy on us here, bro.
Okay, I'll have to figure out what's going on with that. I also need to know what condition they're in. Are the sockets, the housing, the reflectors? You know, we talked about dirt accumulation. They're built up on the fixture now. Something you need to factor in when you look at it. Also, for, you know, on retrofit purposes, we're going to get into all that in a little bit here, but how much room is in the existing fixture? If you are looking to retrofit it, can you
How often do you retrofit?
It depends on what they have. So that's what we're going to get into, what makes more sense. Ken, now if you want.
Okay.
When it's T8, if it's a T8 fluorescent or T5 fluorescent, I would say it's still more common for us to retrofit that than it is to put a new fixture.
What do you think of that as a fixture manufacturer, Jason?
I think for high bay applications, you shouldn't be using lamps most of the time. There's a variety of reasons for it. First and foremost, I don't think the landscape of LED tube retrofits for high bay applications give you enough light or enough punch. We have the data on that. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. I think thermally, you're playing a little bit of a risk game with the thermals in those applications, and also when you get into the fluorescent sockets in some of those high bay applications because of the way the old non-urea sockets were, and some of the environmental applications, the sockets get brittle over time. So I think that for high bay applications, you're absolutely better off changing the fixtures.
See, I would side more with Greg on this one, where, you know, if I'm looking at a guy and he retrofitted 5, 6, whatever years ago to T8 and even T5 now, I'm for sure offering him both of those options for sure. I'm going to say here's the price for the lamp replacement. Here's the price if he's lower voltage, 122.77. Here's the price to remove the ballast on that fixture, and here's the price for a new fixture.
So what I would say to you is that the current landscape of T5HO replacement lamps are all running somewhere in the range of, call it 3,200 to 3,500 total lumens out of the lamp. So most of those lamps are putting out lamps at about a 200 degree radius. So it's not all down. So you are getting some fixture inefficiency that's going to be built into that. So if you think about, let's just take a 4-lamp T5HO, for instance, those fixtures were nominally rated at 20,000 lumens. When you add in fixture efficiency and lamp depreciation, they're getting out 16,000 lumens out of that fixture. If you take 4 3,500 lumen lamps, you're only getting 14,000 at 100% efficiency. So if you're 14,000 lumens against a 16 to 17,000 lumen fixture, you're taking a pretty significant hit on your total lumen output. So when I look at it, if I have somebody with a 4-lamp T5HO up there or a 6-lamp T5HO, and I calculate what you're actually going to get out of those T5 lamps, they're going to take a pretty significant hit. And then in a lot of the markets that we serve, you have the rebate factor in play where they're getting a substantially higher rebate for a fixture retrofit as opposed to a lamp retrofit.
See, that's so the only time kind of- it may, that's the only thing I, that where it makes, it may, it starts to make more sense when you start seeing these very high prescriptive rebates, Greg, where, you know, you see like, you know, $120 or whatever to, you know, funding a high bay, replacement for a purpose-built fixture as opposed to doing the retrofit. I think that's where you start to say, okay, you know what, we're going to rip the fixture out. Where are you at, Greg? Where's your heart with it? What would Greg Eric do? If he had
well,
a
my
factory.
Heart was with. It depends on the fixture and how it looks in good shape, and operating. And it's T8 or T5 right now. I'm probably going to go lamps, just because I know I can get that. It's easy to replace. I know that, you know, we can argue the hours, but a lot of the legit manufacturers are a 5 year on tubes and a 5 year on fixtures. So even though the fixtures they might say are 100,000 and the tubes might be 50,000. If you look at it from a warranty standpoint, it's the same. And the tubes are so much less money right now than fixtures are. It's starting to get a little closer. And until March, when this rebate kicks in, then I'm going to start thinking more fixtures because of that. But that's the only reason, is because of that. I think you can get
The problem is that you're losing 15 to 20% of the light. So if your customer is happy losing that much light, then yeah, the tube is a great opportunity to do a very low cost energy saving retrofit, but it's still a 3,200 to a 3,500 lumen lamp going up against a 5,000 lumen lamp. There's just too much loss there for us to recommend it across the board. And keep in mind, we sell a ton of T5HO retrofit lamps in the Green Creative brand, and we think there are applications where they make a ton of sense. But if you have a customer, especially if they started off at a 400 watt metal halide, went down to a 4-lamp T5HO, they gave up some lumens in that transition. Now, if you go to a lamp after that, they're giving up even more lumens. A lot of times, application for application, you're not putting the light on the floor.
No, I took a one fixture, and again, this is not a scientific study. I did it in our shop with one 6-lamp fixture.
Not a scientific study,
two.
Is it?
And
not
stood
at all.
Directly
two.
Under the fixture with your light meter.
Yes, I did that. I'll give you that too. I underneath and to each side, I took an old fluorescent high bay that we took out of a customer. That, you know, there might have been some dirt accumulation. It wasn't bad by any means. It just was aged 5 years. The reflector might have done it. The lamps were a little aged. And then I did a brand new one, and then I did tubes in both of them. And when you did the tubes in them, I did a 2600 lumen T8 tube in place of them. And these were 6-lamp, 32 watt high ballast factor fixtures. So doing the LED tubes had a 53% increase versus the old fluorescent, and a 16% increase versus a new fluorescent. So again, it was the same fixture. One was new, one was old. And there might have been other factors at play, but to me, that was shown that tubes actually improve the lights in both applications if you put the right tube in. A lot of people going in putting low watt tubes in that don't, and then so you have to know that too. You have to understand the lumen package that goes in it. But that's me.
We've actually run experiments where we've taken some of the higher lumen green creative tubes, built them into a fixture, run some photometrics on it, and compared them to an LED high bay and kind of looked at the lumen output there, as well as what it would be compared to a fluorescent, and we found that we were coming up short. So again, it's a numbers game, and it's a question of what your customer wants. And that's the thing that's beautiful about tubes, is that if you have a customer who's got a 4-lamp T5HO fixture up there, as long as you don't have a thermal condition that you're really worried about, especially an enclosed and gasketed fixture, but you can pop in the lamps, and if they stand under the fixture and say, "Yeah, that's fine," then the lamps are an adequate way to go.
All
right.
And a couple other areas that I wanted to mention. I get to the retrofit versus fixture discussion, but now we're going to backtrack a little. The wiring, you do need to know if it's 480 volt. That definitely factors in what your options are, or if it's 120, 277. And then if it is hardwired or if it's plug and cord. And if it's plug and cord, how many different NEMA configurations are there, Jason, of plugs?
I mean, and your L7s, which are all your 277 volts, you have 15P and 20P are your two most common. L8, which is your 480 volt, is your L8 120. L8 20, I want to say, is the most common. And then when you get down to 120s, we've actually seen straight blade plugs out there. So you have twist lock and straight blade on the 120. So, there's quite a few.
Yeah, so that's something you need to factor in, especially if you're going to just replace it. You want to get the right cord and plug combination, and we need to know all those variations. And then operations too. What are the operating hours? Obvious reasons on energy savings, but then also how is it controlled? Is it a breaker? Is it a switch? Is it a sensor? If it is a sensor, or if they want to sensor it, how are they zoned? You need to know that. So you need to dive into all of those applications when you're looking at a high bay. Anything else that we've missed or that we need to talk about with this?
Yeah, what percentage of your revenue comes from changing high bays, Greg? Probably a huge portion of it.
Oh yeah, for sure. With troffers and office fixtures are the number one fixture. Number two is probably a high bay type
Sure,
for us.
yeah.
And most, I would say most commercial lighting distributors probably in that range.
Yeah, it's the same
Exterior
for me.
coming in.
Yeah.
Things from there, strip lights and all that. But
I got some questions for Jason that we can't ask. I know it's a high bay deep dive, but I have some questions for Jason. So you guys kind of did a merge with Green Creative, or brought the two companies together. How's that gone?
it's gone well. I mean, no merger's ever 100% clean, but when we were I've run ILP, since 2003, started the brand. And what we always found that the biggest challenge that we had in the LED world was coming up against lamp retrofits. And we felt like there was a great synergy to be found to partner up with a company that specializes in very high quality, reliable LED lamps. And that's what we really got with the Green Creative brand. They've got a great line of lamps, and they also have great downlight retrofits, which was an area that we always wanted to get into but never really got into. So what we find is that from the customer's perspective, we can cover the gamut of what you would see on a retrofit with products between the two brands. So our customers have responded very, very positively to it.
Are people going to go modular, like the traditional lamp style LED form factor bulbs? Are they going to move towards that, or is the fixture, are they going to move more and more towards more purpose-built like LED light fixtures? It's an interesting question.
I think there's a consumer for both. I think that there are consumers where they're just happy to take out their old T8 tubes or T5 tubes, as you've experienced in the high bays, and just run with an application like that. There's other consumers where they really want to update the look of the fixture, and they will go to either a retrofit kit with a new look or with a completely new look LED fixture. But I think the most important thing that's going to drive decisions in this industry, probably starting now but significantly into the future, is controls. The problem with tubes and any type of application is they're not dimmable, and you also don't have a good landing place for the controls. So what we do a lot with our retrofit kits, I mean, we're getting into office applications, but we do a ton of lay-in retrofit kits with controls, and we support several different controls. And that's something that's really driving when someone makes the difference between a tube retrofit or a fixture retrofit, whether it's, you know, just straight, you know, on off or bi-level dim or daylight harvesting, grouping and zoning down to a wireless switch, or whether it's full IoT capabilities. I mean, there's a lot of demand for controls-driven fixtures. And now we're even starting to see it a lot in the high bays. Back in the fluorescent days, you couldn't dim those fixtures very efficiently. So now we're seeing customers that really want to utilize the energy savings that they're getting either from their skylights or for applications where they don't want to bring them all the way off. They want to keep some safety level in their aisleways, maybe bring it down to 3 or 4 foot candles, always provide some level of egress lighting. And they also are doing zones where they want to create a zone with the fixtures and bring them up. And we can do that with wireless controls and high bays now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, you know what, I think largely the vast majority of high bay lighting is uncontrolled. So the existing stock out there, maybe you have a fixture mount sensor on them, but and then switches or breaker controlled. The move into controls and high bays, I look at it from the distributor contractor perspective and I say, I don't know. I mean, are there a lot of applications where you can accomplish more with connected lighting, Greg? Is there a lot more there and in terms of energy savings, or do the legacy controls get you 95% of the way there anyway?
If you're asking me, I think legacy controls can do a lot of that. I think sensoring in if we're looking at high bay applications, makes a lot of sense to consider.
For sure.
Because a lot of these facilities are racks and areas that are not, somebody's not in all the time.
Sure.
So you definitely want to do that. So I think it's important to fully understand.
So Jason,
the options are.
Can you make the case for connected lighting in the high bay application, a really strong case for connected lighting in the high bay application right now? Or are you still kind of like, yeah, it can happen, but what are we going to do with it?
Well, we're coming back to where are you at with your consumer. For us, we send out about 35% of our high bays go out with some type of control where they're using some type of external signal to say, hey, turn this light on, turn it off, or bring it down to 5% for energy savings. When you start getting into connected controls, now you're starting to really getting into that zoning applications. We have very sophisticated distribution customers that say, I don't want the popcorn effect in an aisle. I want that first fixture to come on and I want to zone out the entire aisle. We have customers who say that they want to put a smart lighting application that says, I want all these fixtures to work together. I want them to come up and down with the daylight harvesting, and I want to be able to put them on some type of a external control timer that says for my third shift applications, I only want to go down to 10 to 15% light in my warehouse, where during the days I want 100% light in the warehouse. I mean, there's all those applications, and there are consumers out there that will absolutely pay for that. I think the next level of that, which we'll see over the next several years, will be when you're using some type of a Bluetooth tracking device to either track pallets, equipments, or inventory. We're already starting to see it in high-tech hospital applications. I think there will be a play for that at some point in the future, where we're going to use the connected lighting that comes off the high bay control to track either people, processes, or inventories in industrial applications.
And now we're in the matrix. And on that note, we're going to call it. Jason, thanks for coming on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, man. Greg, you got anything final words there, bud?
No, I think it was an important discussion and something that we got to keep looking at is what makes sense for our customers, because high bays are a common fixture that we see. So make sure
Jason,
you have
thanks
options.
For coming on the show.
That's what's always good.
Thank you guys very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. We haven't had to read. Folks, this is the second take of the conclusion to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast you just listened to. And we haven't had to do a second take on an intro or a conclusion for a long time. But what you need to know right now is you need to go to ILP-INC.com for ILP. Lighting offering. And guess what, Greg? They also own Green Creative, buddy. Tell me all about
that.
They
do.
Yeah, so they've got solutions now for you. ILP is their fixture side of the business, and Green Creative is their lamp side. Green Creative is an innovative company that's been around for a number of years now, coming out with high quality product that can be used in a lot of everyday applications. And in addition to that, great pricing, great service. You can see real time inventory, a lot of cool things that Green Creative offers that other people don't. And they even have lumen changing packages on some of their fixtures, which is a real unique feature. So if you need something in LED, ILP or Green Creative, the same company, they have it covered for you.
Yeah, you know, ILP is making a lot of lights, dude. They're really making a lot of lights, you know.
They're cranking them out, and they still have LED, and they have fluorescent fixtures if you ever need those.
I think he told us 20,000 a month or something like that.
20,000 a month made in for ILP, Green Creative. I don't have that number, but they make a lot, too.
They're moving, man. They're making moves in the business. That's a lot of luminaires to ship, dude. That's a lot
Absolutely.
Of lights.
So they know what they're doing.
Yeah, go to ILP-INC.com, baby. That's ILP-INC.com. You know, they were leaders in the fluorescent revolution, and now they're leaders in the LED revolution. So good chatting with you, Jason Hendren. And, Greg, you know, this show is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. That's nailed.org for information on joining us, buddy. Listen, Greg, you know what's funny?
What's that?
Is the Green Creative ILP merger or acquisition, whatever the heck that was, is that the first one of many?
The first significant one. There have been others, you know, where I know Lutron has bought Catcher, things like that, that have been a little smaller, but this one seemed like the first big one. And I think more are coming, as we've talked about.
No, but you know what? Lutron, that's more like on the controls thing. That's a different thing. You know, this is the first thing I've heard of, like a light. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just out of it. Maybe I should check Edison Report more. But there is lots of mergers and acquisitions going on. But that's the first one I heard where a direct supplier, two direct suppliers of mine merged.
True. Yeah, same with me. I think that's something that we'll see more and more of as we go, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, folks, we're always grateful to you guys. We cracked the top 100 on Podomatic in the overall category for a podcast about light bulbs. You know what? It ain't about Greg and I. It's about you listeners, folks. Thanks for listening, and all of our sponsors and all the people that at the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors that supported us. So, hey, Greg and I are grateful, even though we act cocky sometimes. We really appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. If you are lost, the Lord is there to find you.